Hi, welcome, and thank you for joining us for the second podcast that's been put together by the Accelerated Access Collaborative. My name is Hitasha Rupani. I'm a chest physician and I work in Southampton. I'm also an asthma doctor, and I've worked very closely with the two colleagues that are on the podcast with me. And so it gives me great pleasure to introduce them to you. So I'll hand over to you now, Beverly.
Thanks, Natasha. My name's Beverly Bostock and I work as an advanced nurse practitioner in general practice in Gloucestershire. And I'm also the asthma lead for the Association of Respiratory Nurse Specialists. Gráinne.
Thanks, Bev, and thanks, Natasha. My name's Gráinne D'Ancona. I'm consultant pharmacist for respiratory medicine at Guy's St Thomas's Hospital in London. And I'm one of the asthma clinical champions for the AAC.
So in the next 20 minutes or so, we thought we'd go through what we've put together as the top tips from the outputs of the AAC or from the last sort of 12 to 18 months. And we've tried to group this together, sort of the six top tips or the super six in helping us and everyone else manage patients with uncontrolled and potentially severe asthma. So we thought we'd start off by, or I thought I'd start off by sort of trying to highlight why it's important to identify these patients. And people often say to me, well, it's just asthma. And it's not just asthma. We know that most people with asthma are well controlled in their treatment, their inhaled therapy, but there are some patients that continue to have exacerbations. So they continue to require courses of steroids, sometimes two, three, four, five in a year. And sometimes these lead to hospital admissions. And so it's really important that we can identify these patients so we can adjust their treatment, escalate their treatment to try and improve their asthma control. And we know that from work that's been done in England, that over 70% of patients that have uncontrolled and potentially severe asthma are out there. They're not known to secondary care. They're not known to severe asthma centers. They're there in the community. And so really this highlights that we need to be more proactive in trying to identify these patients. And I think that's important for two reasons. Firstly, because the asthma can impact patients' lives. Asthma attacks and exacerbations can affect their work, their ability to go to school, their family life. It affects everything. So we really need to do more to try and help them. And secondly, the treatments that are used for these exacerbations, so steroids, can have devastating side effects. And so, again, highlighting that we do need to try and identify these patients so we can improve their asthma control. I guess the next thing, or one of the things we try and think about, is how do we go about identifying these patients? And I'm often asked this question, how do we find them? But I thought I would hand this over to Bev at this point, because as Bev said, she works a lot in primary care, and this is where most of these patients are identified. So Bev, what are your thoughts on that?
Thanks, Natasha. I think it's a really good point that, you know, when patients have to take potentially recurrent courses of oral corticosteroids because their asthma is not well controlled, this is a really important, a really quite devastating element of the disease, which is potentially avoidable for the vast majority of patients. So I think when I started being involved in this project, looking at uncontrolled and severe asthma, I remember thinking, well, severe asthma, that's a secondary and tertiary care thing. That doesn't really impact on primary care. And I couldn't have been more wrong, quite frankly, because if we don't pick up on these individuals and ensure that they get appropriate interventions and referral where indicated, then we are missing a trick. So I think it becomes a really important combination of approaches, which is highlighting to healthcare professionals how we identify these individuals and really raising the bar when we think about what's acceptable when it comes to asthma control and what level of symptoms we consider to be, you know, acceptable, if indeed there is a level of symptoms that's acceptable. But also we need to work with people who live with asthma to get them to understand that actually their asthma should really, for the most part, only impact on them once or twice a day when they take their daily inhaled corticosteroid that keeps them nicely controlled. So I think we need to really stop and think about how much acceptance is there of poor symptom management and how we work together to say, in good asthma control, it should be total control. There should be no symptoms. People should be able to do exactly what they want to do on a day-to-day basis without asthma impacting on their quality of life. And so I think if you've got any individual that is not in that position, then we have potentially have some work to do. Gronja, I know that a lot of pharmacists are doing asthma reviews and getting very involved in asthma management now. Anything that you can think of to add to that?
Yeah, I mean, thanks, Bev. I agree with everything you said around finding these patients, supporting them to feel better. And I think, you know, there's one thing is that there are plenty of patients to go round and lots of willing and able healthcare professionals to support them. And I'm glad that pharmacists are one of them. So what we've got is, you know, we're used to having asthma annual reviews or offering asthma annual reviews. And I think something that maybe pharmacists add that's just a little bit different is quite new around these structured medicines reviews, where they can find the patients who have asthma and help optimise their medicines, because we do know that the medicines work. However, we know that sometimes they're not used in quite the way that we think they should be or could be. So certainly that's something that I want pharmacists to kind of step up and take a lead on. And, you know, as you've mentioned, this is all about identifying patients who would benefit from these reviews. And certainly one of the tools that we've developed is called Spectra, which will help identify patients at high risk of sort of exacerbations and at higher risk. Hitasha, you were probably the lead on that amongst the team. So do you want to say a few words about Spectra?
I can do, apart from its James Bond themed name. So we developed Spectra as a search tool to support colleagues within primary care to help identify these patients that have an uncontrolled and potentially severe asthma. But if we take a step back and think, well, why did we do this? Because as Beverly said, there's lots of opportunities to find these patients, to identify them, and we can find them when they have their annual asthma review, but that happens once a year and they may not attend. We can identify them when they attend, if say they had an exacerbation and they come to get a course of steroids or after exacerbation to make sure they're better. But again, that's a very reactive way. So this is why we developed a tool that could be more proactive in identifying these patients. And really, we would recommend that this tool or any other tool that's used, because there are others out there, should be used at a sort of 6-monthly basis. Because then somebody doesn't need to be uncontrolled for longer than that before they're identified, so that their asthma can be, their treatments can be sort of optimized and their control can be improved. So Spectra is one tool. It identifies people that have had that are on inhaled steroids, and it can help prioritize patients in terms of whether they're on higher dose inhaled steroids or lower dose inhaled steroids. And then it tells you they've had how many exacerbations they've had. So it picks up anyone that's had 2 or more courses of steroids prescribed, but then it'll prioritize the patients as well. So they've had more than 3 courses, or they've had more than 2 courses. So you know who to get to try and target in the first instance. It also picks up people that have had prescription of 6 or more of their rescue inhalers in the 12-month period. And this is one way that we felt we could support primary care clinicians across the board to identify these patients with potentially severe asthma. And then once they've been identified and the list has been generated, I think at that point I would hope that there would be some work that happens in primary care with the practice nurse or the pharmacist that's there in primary care to try and optimize their asthma control. And Beverly, I know you've developed a tool to help support that, and I wondered if you could share that with our audience now.
Absolutely, yes. In life, I find that things are so much easier if I've got a little aid memoir so that I can go through it mentally and just remind myself of what I should be looking for. So we thought for people working in primary care, it would be really useful to have something which we have called the HASTE tool, which will just be a quick run through in your mind to think, could this individual have uncontrolled asthma, and actually is this potentially severe asthma that requires the input from a severe asthma centre? And the HASTE stands for, what we say is make haste and refer. But HASTE stands for, is the individual on high intensity treatment? So that's the H, high intensity treatment. So that could be high doses of inhaled corticosteroids. It could be that actually they're having oral corticosteroids. It could be that they're on multiple types of medication, and it could be that they're overusing their blue inhalers, as mentioned. So there are lots of ways that you can interpret the high intensity treatment. But the idea is that we look at those individuals and we say, if they're well controlled, it may be that that treatment is appropriate, but actually it may not be. It may be that the high level of treatment is too high, and it also may be that they're not well controlled on that level of medication. So we need to think about those individuals with high intensity treatments. The A is for adherence, and I'm going to come to Gráinne about this shortly, but adherence obviously is so important, because a high proportion of people who are referred actually are not taking their medication. And so we need to be really, really clear by looking at how many prescriptions are ordered, looking at the ratio of the inhaled corticosteroid to the reliever medication potentially, thinking about whether patients have got stockpiles at home, and actually proactively asking them about, you know, how many have you got in the drawer, to see whether, even when they're ordering it, are they actually using that treatment. So working through adherence is really important. Then the S is for severe exacerbation. So if they've had two exacerbations or more in the last year, then we would say that have required oral corticosteroids, then we would say that these are patients who we need to flag up. You know, one course is a red flag, arguably. So two courses is definitely a cause for concern. And certainly if that patient's been hospitalized with severe exacerbation, then that's another red flag. T, you will not be surprised to know, is for technique. It's so important. You know, I say this all the time. It's like giving a baby medicine on a fork if you haven't got inhaler technique right, because that medicine just isn't going where it needs to go. So inhaler technique needs to be done, and needs to be done properly. This is not a tick box exercise. This is absolutely essential to deciding on how best to manage that patient going forward. And then the E is, have we excluded any other conditions that might be causing those uncontrolled symptoms? So that might be things like rhinitis, a really important comorbid condition for many patients, or it might be reflux, or there might be a whole host of other reasons why those symptoms are not as well controlled as they could be, that need a different approach. So that's HASTE, that's the essence of HASTE. But I am going to ask Gráinne, you're a bit of a queen of adherence, I think. Do you want to tell us more about your views on that?
Yeah, thanks, Bev. I think you described it beautifully already, but certainly, you know, from audits and at the Guy's Centre, we know that just over half of the referrals we receive into our tertiary centre, you know, the patients aren't picking up enough prescriptions from their practices to be described as optimally adherent. Now, as you've just described, you know, just because they're being collected, the prescriptions are being collected, doesn't mean that they're being used appropriately. But certainly if they're not being collected, then it's highly unlikely. So there's definitely a bit of work to do, I think, in primary care. And certainly we're happy to kind of support that as far as possible. And also, as you mentioned, with the T for technique, you know, I like your analogy with the fork. And that's absolutely right. You know, that these devices are not the easiest to use. And certainly we do make lots of mistakes. I think also, you know, the last one you mentioned is about excluding other conditions. And I think you're absolutely right there. You know, one of the outputs that we have is around sort of MDT leaflet, and about supporting practices and patients to understand what happens within the asthma clinic, who's there, what we're there to do. So, for example, in our asthma clinic, it's the pharmacist's role to kind of lead on adherence. But certainly we've got lots of other people in the MDT and the multidisciplinary team that support other areas of sort of asthma management.
I guess the one of the things to add to identifying patients and supporting primary care colleagues in identifying these patients is that one of the other outputs from the AAC has been the development of NHS BSA steroid dashboard, which is something that Gráinne has led on. So perhaps I'll ask Dr. Gráinne to describe it and what can be done with it, and how it can help find patients that are uncontrolled.
Thanks, Natasha. So we've mentioned Spectra, which is a tool that can be downloaded by practices to identify patients who perhaps need a review and potentially even referral into secondary or tertiary care. One of the other tools we have is this dashboard that identifies patients who are having high cumulative doses of prednisolone dispensed to them. And what practices can do is they can access this through the NHS BSA. If they contact the BSA, they will be sent the hospital numbers of patients who've been flagged up. So it's really becoming easier and easier to identify these patients who are having lots and lots of corticosteroids and are at high risk of the consequences of that. So we've got lots of different sort of thresholds for prednisolone use. We've got different ages, so you can find pediatric and young adults as well. So really a tool worth investigating and having a look at within your own practice or PCN or even ICS level data.
And just to add to that, it's a fantastic tool because it identifies people that are on inhalers that are requiring steroids, but also that it helps highlight and I guess show you exactly how much steroids your patients are getting. And we know that, for example, a course of prednisolone, if you give somebody 40 milligrams for 7 days, that's roughly just under 300 milligrams of prednisolone. And through this dashboard, you can see the number of patients that have had, for example, over 2 grams of prednisolone in a year or 3 grams of prednisolone in a year. And there are quite a lot of patients. So please do have a look at the dashboard and try and get to your local data. So again, there's one more way of trying to find these patients that are uncontrolled and are potentially sort of, I guess, out there and unknown to secondary care and specialist asthma centres. So Bev, say we've identified these patients, we've been through HAST. What are your thoughts on referring them onto secondary care and specialist asthma centres? What sort of things do you think it's important to include in that referral letter?
So I think we need to make sure that we've gone through all of those key areas because, as I mentioned earlier, unfortunately, a significant number of patients who are referred on actually have some basic interventions that might make all the difference and might have meant that that referral wasn't necessary. So we need to make sure that we have really checked up on those HAST aspects. But I think if we do that, then we have the confidence at that point to refer, knowing that we've done everything that we can do in primary care and recognising when we need to bring in our specialist colleagues. So referral on to secondary care then becomes, you know, the next step. And we would then be relying on our secondary care colleagues for the most part to consider which patients actually need referring on to tertiary care, onto the severe asthma centres. And I think that's when we know that those individuals have been fine-tuned so that the people turning up at the severe asthma centres are those people who really need the input of the severe asthma centres. And that's where you come in, Hitasha, with your skills in that department. And I think it would be really useful for primary care clinicians to understand what actually happens to people when they arrive at the severe asthma centre. Can you demystify it for us?
I can certainly try and demystify it. So I'll go back to what Gronya said before. The AAC, we produce a number of leaflets for patients, and one of them is around what happens in the severe asthma centre so that we can, so patients can try and get some understanding before they arrive and before they come to the clinic. And I guess one of the benefits of a severe asthma centre, and there's several across the country, scattered all across, is that we provide what we like to think of as a systematic assessment for our patients. So they'll see different members of our multidisciplinary team. They'll see our specialist nurses. They'll see ourselves, our pharmacist. And then depending on what their underlying clinical needs are, they may see our clinical psychologist. Most of them will have a review from our physiotherapist to sort of address their breathing pattern. And then they'll have some additional investigations done, again, based on their history and their clinical need. And we know that going through this sort of systematic assessment in any severe asthma centre improves asthma control and has been shown to reduce the number of steroids patients have and improve their symptom control, regardless of whether they get any other advanced treatments, regardless of whether they get a biologic or not, coming through and going through that assessment, having that input from the MDT and that treatment optimization is really helpful. And even sort of going back to even simpler things, I mean, we spend time sort of clarifying the diagnosis. I sometimes get people that are referred and it's because it's unclear if their symptoms are due to asthma or something else. And then we can do a whole array of investigations to help sort of unpick that. One of the things I just wanted to add to referring patients into severe asthma centers is that if somebody is on maintenance daily steroids for their asthma, so it's taking steroids for their asthma every day, and they're not known to secondary care or severe asthma center, they should be referred directly through the severe asthma center. That would be our recommendation, because those patients need sort of almost an urgent review of their asthma, of their treatments, so that we can try and sort of support them come off their daily steroids if possible. So that's just the one thing to add to that referral process. So I know, Grant, you've done a lot of work looking at people that are referred in, and you've looked at their adherence and things. What other things do we, I guess, in severe asthma centres look for in these referral letters? So what are the things that we'd like to, or you'd think we should be included?
So unfortunately, I spend quite a lot of time looking to find out the adherence data. So one of the other tools that we have is around the, and I mentioned earlier about the structured medicines review. This is a kind of a systematic approach to assessing the patient and their adherence, their sort of what we can do to optimize their medicines use. But what that can also do is it can form part of the referral. So it will pull together all of the answers to the questions around their medicines, various questionnaires will be in there, and also their actual adherence, MPR or medicines possession ratio. So just how many inhaled corticosteroid prescriptions have they picked up in the last year? It all goes into a lovely PDF, which can be sent off with referrals. So I think selfishly, if there was something that we could do to improve the transfer of that information so that I could spend more time with patients in clinic, actually help solving or improving their adherence rather than finding non-adherence, then I'd be very happy. But that's a very selfish kind of request on my behalf. We've got lots of, as you mentioned, about the leaflets and things. Again, we've got leaflets on adherence to support patients to tell us when they're not using their medicines as we think, and actually to normalize that and help patients realize that it's okay to tell us that they're not happy with their medicines and work with us to improve it. So I think that's probably what I would like to see from the referral.
And also just to add as well is that within the Spectra tool that we've created is a referral template that can be used by practices. And so you don't actually have to use the Spectra search tool to use the referral template. It can be downloaded separately and it will automatically pull through the necessary information required in a referral, such as the adherence, such as the comorbidities, such as their investigations and their blood ESM count. It'll pull all that through your electronic patient records of primary care into this referral template. And then you could use that when you make that referral into either secondary care or a specialist asthma centre.
So, Hitasha, we find the patients who are struggling in primary care. We've referred them in with all of the information that we need. They've undergone a systematic assessment by the multidisciplinary team. What do we do next?
So when we come to the point, and if the patient is still on control, so they're still having exacerbations, they're adherent to their prescribed treatment, and they have raised biomarkers, and by this I mean that their blood eosinophil count is raised, or they're highly atopic, so they're allergic to things they're exposed to all year round, then we can discuss them in our MDT to think about whether they would benefit from getting a treatment such as a biologic. And all biologics that are prescribed within England go through an MDT for the MDT to approve that that's the right step for the patient. And really, I think biologics have revolutionized the treatments I can offer. So they give me so much more choice. And they've really transformed the lives of our patients. We get, and I'm sure you do as well, regular feedback from patients saying how great they feel on these biologics. And so just a really, I guess, a quick summary of biologics there. There's relatively new treatments, and I say new because we've been using them more and more in the last 5 years or so, even though the first one was, I think it's been out for about 10 to 15 years. But in the last 5 years, we've had this whole sort of increased use of biologics, and they work in a very targeted way to reduce the inflammation within the lungs of patients with asthma. And by doing this in a very targeted way, they reduce the number of exacerbations people have. And so as a consequence, reduce the amount of steroids they need. And then they also help improve their asthma control. And in some patients can improve their lung function. But the main thing is reducing the amount of steroids they need. And by and large, most of my patients, so 80 to 90% of them, have a significant reduction in the number of exacerbations they have, so by at least by 50%, if not more, most of them more, but at least by 50%. And also most of our patients are able to come off their daily prednisolone whilst being on a biologic. So they work really well. And for the right patient, they are absolutely great, but we have to make sure we've assessed them, that it's the right treatment for them, and that the MDT approves them. So I guess in summary, it just leads me to just briefly touch on the consensus pathway that's going to be coming out very soon for patients with uncontrolled and potentially severe asthma. This is a pathway that's been put together by members of the AAC, but we've worked with colleagues across the country and across primary, secondary and specialist care to come up with this consensus. And the highlights from this pathway are really all the things we've been through in this podcast. So the importance of identifying patients, sort of doing a proactive search every 6 months for referring them appropriately. And once they're referred into secondary care and then into specialist asthma centres, for them to undergo a systematic assessment. And then if they're approved to have a biologic, we recommended that these biologics be started within 4 weeks. Once biologics are started, please don't think that your patients are going to have to come to our centres every month for these injections. Most of them go on to what we call home care, so they self-administer the biologics at home. And then as a final loop back, once patients have been, diagnosed as having severe asthma, in our pathway, we've also recommended that the SNOMED code for severe asthma is applied to their primary care records, so that this can be a way to monitor these patients moving forward. All of this information is on the Asthma Biologics Toolkit, which is on the Oxford AHSN website, and the pathway will also be published in the next few weeks with links that will be on the Oxford AHSN website.